Devana writes to us this week for the mailbag. Hi, Lisa. I want to share with you my recent experience and how Organize 365 has made a very big difference. I'm sure you have heard of the Butte County campfire of November 8th. I live in Chico, California, and have relatives that evacuated their homes in Paradise, California. I was able to host them for a month with only a couple of hours' notice. I was at work the morning of the campfire. I had no idea that we would be hosting three adults, two of them 89 years old, two dogs, and a cat by that afternoon. It was almost 2 weeks before we would learn if their houses had made it. It didn't. The relatives stayed at our house for a month and are now staying with other family members. I have such a feeling of accomplishment, and I'm so proud our home was organized enough to offer up shelter on short notice, and the household functioned smoothly. Thank you, Lisa. If you have an Organize 365 success story, share it with us. Send us an email at lisa@organize365.com and tell us how you've taken back your home, your paper, and your life.
Welcome to the Organize 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started.
I have a treat for you guys today. This is not the first time you will have heard her on the podcast. And probably not the last time you'll hear her on the podcast. I have Monique Orb from OrganizingYourChaos.com, and we are going to deep dive into parenting and adoption and IEPs and organizing everything that we need to organize when advocating for our kids if they don't, out of the box, just, you know, follow all the parenting books, which is hashtag all the kids. Right, Monique?
Yep. It's all the kids for sure.
All the kids. So you've heard Monique on at least one, I think two podcasts in the past. She's one of the organizers that I recommend if you need a virtual organizer. So if you're like, oh, I really wish I could work with a professional organizer virtually, go to organizingyourchaos.com. Monique has virtual organizing available. If her name sounds kind of familiar, like, why do I know that name? It is because she runs the Sunday Basket Club for us. So if you are in the Sunday Basket Club, she is who you see on Sunday. Monique has followed me forever. I think you're my oldest fan, Monique.
Yay! Favorite fans.
So today, Organize 365, if you're following me on Instagram, you already know that we've come out with an IEP binder. And today, we are going to deep dive into what is an IEP binder, why would you need one, what's in the Organize 365 one. And so Monique and I got on to record this, and she was like, oh, I saw the cover of the binder, is the Warrior Mama, and I remember your Warrior Mama blog. And I was like, you really are the original fan, Monique, you really are.
That was a long time. What, 6 years?
Older than that.
That blog.
It's 2009.
Okay.
2009 to 2011. And then I took it down before Organize 365 started.
Well, yeah, because I remember one time looking for it. I'm like, what the heck? It is gone.
It is gone because I was too transparent about my kids. And so we are going to be talking about our kids, but not their story that's theirs to tell, ours from our parenting aspect. Yeah. So Monique and I have a lot in common. We are both professional organizers. We both started our businesses about the same time, like officially started them. When did you officially start yours?
Well, this month, the 9th of January, starts my 7th year.
Okay, so literally we started our businesses within a week of each other. Yeah. We literally started our businesses at exactly the same time in exactly the same year. Yeah. However, I adopted two children and birthed zero. Monique, why don't you share your statistics on birthing and adopting children?
Statistics. My husband and I have three biological children, and we also have three internationally adopted children at the ages of 7, 9, and 11, which dovetailed into my biological children of 8, 9, and 13.
Okay, so that ended up being six kids between the ages of what and what?
7 and 13.
Okay.
And two.
And this is why the name of Monique's business is called Organizing Your Chaos. Because six kids within 6 years, I mean, you're going to have chaos, right?
Well, it went from 3 to 6 overnight. it was pure chaos at that
nuts.
Point. Because not only did we adopt three kids at once, my three children came from Ukraine, so I could not talk to them. They didn't even speak English.
Monique likes a challenge is all I have to say. She just likes a good challenge. Oh, really? Well, then how can I make that harder on myself? Let's do that.
Yeah.
And my children are domestically adopted. They were both born in the state of Ohio. So we have adopted children. Monique has birth children, lots of children. And the current ages of your children, Monique?
17, 18, 20, 21, 21, and 24.
And mine are 17 and 19. So we have been through, I did a podcast a long time ago. I don't remember which number it is. I'll look it up. But it's about the stages of parenting. And I remember hearing James, was it James Dobson? I think of Focus on the Family. I listened to him a lot when I had my kids that were little. And I'm pretty sure it was him that talked about like the three phases of parenthood, like 0 to 6, 6 to 12, 12 to 18. Mm-hmm. And I kind of extended mine because we have delays. So I was like, you know, really before school and then those school years and then the launching years. And so we are definitely both in those launching years where we're ending
mine
high school.
Mine aren't launching.
Well, it's my fault. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, they're ending the traditional public school that ends at 18. Like, we're navigating the late teens, 20s, which is difficult for everyone. I'm just going to flat out say it's difficult for everybody. Yeah. I mean, personally, going through it, I didn't find it difficult at all. But I don't know, as my parents would say the same thing. I think your 20s are kind of a challenge, and I think more so for anyone who's developmentally delayed. They're a challenge because really, you're more functioning like a 14 to 18-year-old instead of an 18 to 24-year-old. And so that podcast episode we had that came out January 2nd, I think, about my seven-year transformation, I really dove into over the last 7 years how I, as a person, have changed by getting more organized, and specifically about my kids. The emails that I get from that podcast are awesome. I mean, so many moms saying, thank you so much for talking about how developmental delays don't magically go away, how difficult it is to parent outside of the norm or feel like you are the only one outside of the norm. And so first thing I want to say, Monique and I would agree to on this, especially being professional organizers, we're going to talk about this IEP binder. And I said, I honestly, legitimately don't know anyone that doesn't need this for at least one of their kids. It's not like you need this for every kid. But of all the friends and people that I know, there's some special accommodation for at least one of their kids. Do you think that's...
I think it's very true.
Yeah.
Some accommodations might be medical, might be emotional, learning delays, or you can add a medical...
Add it all together. Have them together.
And that's even a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, so we came out with the four binders a year ago that we have the household reference, household operations, medical, and financial. And I said that the medical binder, you need one for each family member for their medical records. And that's what I have been using for my kids' IEP. But the IEP binder is a little bit different. If your kids have like... type 1 diabetes, then the medical binder is perfect. But if they have anything educationally related, then you're going to want the IEP binder. Also, the medical binder works for anyone, whereas the IEP binder really is focusing on that child who is, I would say, under the age of 21 to 25. It's your playbook as the mom for advocating and getting your child specifically what they need. Don't you would say, Monique?
Oh, absolutely. I was telling Lisa after I looked through the IEP binder, because I have, you know, notebooks and folders and information that I have accumulated for two of my children, you know, over the last 10 years, and wishing that I would have had this playbook, this binder set up in such a way that it will make it easy for parents who need to deal with the school system and medical doctors and psychologists or therapists or occupational therapists, whatever extra help you are getting for your kids. It is laid out beautifully in the way that you can find things and keep track of things. And actually, when you advocate for your kids, I know my kids and I know what it's like here at home. And sometimes it looks different at school, but our kids at home is their safest place. And so we get all of it at home, and all of it is not always all good. But being able to have a place to track things and to explain things and come in like a warrior for your kids. You're advocating for your kids because they don't know what to advocate for themselves. And the more documentation you have to prove your point, the better help your kids will get.
So we're going to go through this binder, but honestly, what it does is it gives you confidence and it makes people take you seriously. I have been saying for years to grab any binder on your bookshelf and walk into your next medical or school appointment with that binder and then start talking, and the people in the room will listen to you differently. No kidding. Someone did that. They just grabbed a random binder, did not even have any substantiating documentation in it, and went to their next IEP meeting and got more from that committee than they did in the past. Walking in there with a binder, this binder or any binder, makes it look like you prepared for the meeting, like you could whip out a paper at any minute, and they don't know what's in that binder. Like, not knowing what's in that binder makes everyone in that meeting a little nervous. It does not change the amount that you know your kid. You already knew everything your kid needed, and you're able to advocate for him, but it sounds ridiculous. But if you walk in with that binder, they take you seriously. They also take you more seriously, by the way, if you put on dress pants and heels. I guarantee you, you put on dress pants and heels and look like you're going to go speak on a stage and you walk into an IEP meeting, you get a lot more out of that IEP meeting than if you go in jeans and a sweatshirt. So dress the part, walk in with a binder, and then confidently ask for what you know your kids need. However, that's true for many of you that have already been dealing with this. We want to really talk about what happens when you're brand new to needing an IEP or advocating for your child. You've been listening maybe to some of these Organize 365 podcasts, and you're like, I didn't even know what a developmental delay is. But now that I've researched it since that last podcast, I'm pretty sure we're dealing with one of those. How do I even get this started? So, Monique, with your kids, how'd you get the ball rolling? And was there anything that you did that helped you get more services? Like in hindsight, because I did this, I know I got more services.
Okay. When we thought we needed some services, we have ADHD with a couple of my kids who need the services. And so that was, you know, a medical thing, but it had to go under a particular category. So I had to figure out, you know, if they're going to accept that as a diagnosis with an IEP because they want all this documentation. So getting any sort of medical documentation you can have first, you know, on paper, signed and dated was huge because it's not just you saying, oh, my kid has this or that. They need to see it to prove it. So that was the first thing. I did in, I don't know if they still have it, but probably 8-9 years ago, the state of Indiana, which is where I live.
And every state is different, by the way. Monique's in Indiana. I'm in Ohio. Every single state is different.
There was a place at Riley's Children's Hospital in Indianapolis that had a department that dealt with international adoptions.
Cincinnati has that.
Okay, so what I did was I contacted them, and they ran all of these tests that were all covered under our insurance. And so I was able to go back and take all these tests, which helped to solidify like developmental delays, and they even had more things that they suggested that the school do. You know, I didn't know, you know, we as parents have, number one, we didn't get a manual for any of this.
No.
And we don't know what we don't know. And as parents, we're going through this minefield in this forest trying to figure out what do I need? What don't I need? The manual is going to be great because it's going to lay a bunch of stuff out that someone else has already figured out that you need. But secondly, doing as much research as you can. And once you discover things and adding that to your child's portfolio, their binder, and having, you know, documented proof is huge because everybody wants to see something by somebody who's a professional written on paper. And that is frustrating because they don't want to just take our word for it as parents.
Right. So when you adopt internationally, I think this is true in most states, your child then does get checked out by your local children's hospital, and they are pretty good about running all of these tests to see what they need. One of the issues I've seen some of my friends run into with internationally adopted children is that, at least here in the state of Ohio, your IEP, which is your individualized education plan, it's just extra services you get at a public school, can either be for a specific diagnosis, like learning disability, ADHD, whatever, or English as a second language. And in Ohio, you can't have both. Can you have both, Monique, in Indiana?
We didn't look into that.
Okay, so if you get English as a second language, they don't do anything else because they just figure everything is the fact that you don't know English.
Right. No, I would agree to that. At the beginning, the first couple years, we didn't know that
there was a discrepancy. Yeah.
Other problems.
Right.
I'm going to say there were problems, but other issues because language was the first thing, hurdle we were trying to overcome.
Yeah. So then if you have a domestically adopted child like we do, you don't have the English as a second language issue. So in that case, you're bumping right up to, are there any additional needs that need to be addressed? And I remember there was a study, I don't have the link to it, but there was a study out of California when we first adopted our kids that was a psychology practice, and they said 85% of their patients were adopted children. And they were like, was that because adopted children needed more psychological care? Was it that adoptive parents are more proactive in seeking care for their children? You know, like, so there's that whole thing, which leads also to educating, like, if you have a birth child, like our neighbor is a great example. Their kids just didn't seem to learn to read until 7. But every single one of them, like overnight when they were 7, all of a sudden were reading fluently. So in kindergarten and first grade, their first child was like, oh, you need all this extra stuff. And their second one, by the time they got to the third child, they said, no, we learned at 7. Like, he doesn't need any of that extra stuff. Trust me, one day when he's 7, he's just going to read fluently. And that's exactly what happened. So they didn't need to pursue any of that extra stuff for their third child because they'd watched the other two children. So from an adoption point of view, we don't have that benefit of knowing that this is just a trend genetically in our family. And, oh, yeah, Uncle Eddie did that, and Aunt Marvin, and whatever. So that's just something that happens in our family. Everything for an adoptive parent is like, well, I don't know. Is this normal? Is this not normal? Should we fix it? So you have to think about that. And then when you're talking about specifically IEPs, which is an educational documentation, if your child has ADHD, does their ADHD impact their ability to learn? Because if it doesn't impact their ability to learn, then you cannot get an IEP. The only reason you need an IEP is because there is something external that needs to be done in order for them to hit state standards. So let's say you have a kid that's got a really high IQ, but their ADHD off the charts. Well, if they are exceeding the norms of everyone else in that classroom, like they're not having problems with their grades are not low, even if it's more difficult for them to learn, because their grades are not low, they are not going to receive extra services. So extra services, IEP, are related to medical needs and then also educational needs, and that those educational needs impact so much that this child is falling below the norm of their classmates, usually by more than a year. So they're more than a year behind everyone else in their class. And so now we will bring in support services and we will add more to help them improve. Same as what you heard, Monique?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And I think even an add to that, when you have children who are adopted, you don't know what their, I would say you don't know. Some people do, some people don't. We did not know medical history.
Yeah, we didn't either.
Any sort of genetic delays or things like that, which, anytime I filled a paper out, it asked for a history. I start at the bottom, left-hand corner, make a big line, and just write, do
adopted.
Not know. That's it.
Right.
So there is a struggle with the do not know, because it's this big black hole of what is going on. How do we figure this out?
So when your kids are adopted internationally, I told you, usually the children's hospital there will run this battery of tests, which will kind of give you a baseline for, okay, what's the IQ? Yep. And a lot in schools is based on the IQ because IQ is average. So above and below average, and that's where we're going to take our testing from. I cannot remember which standardized test it is. There's one standardized test. It might even be the Iowa Tests of Basic Skills, where one of those numbers is actually the IQ. You can Google it. So anyway, it's going to be based on IQ. In there, when they do the IQ test, it's usually the WISC, W-I-S-C.
Yep.
And when they do the WISC, there are a couple of, I can now read these because we've done it so many times, but there are a couple of key indicators in there that will tell you if you're possibly dealing with ADHD, which are specifically your processing speed and your working memory. So you will get those scores. So you may have an average or above average IQ, but if your processing and your working memory are low, that's usually indicative to an underlying ADHD issue, which may be causing your performance in school to be lower than what your IQ is. Additionally, if you have a lower IQ, so normal is 85 to 115, so let's say you have an IQ of 78 and you're not performing well in school. Well, the school may say that yes, but you shouldn't be performing average because your IQ is below average. So learning disabilities is a discrepancy between a higher IQ and a lower performance would be a learning disability discrepancy, but possibly without that ADHD piece. And then there's comorbidity, which I've talked about in the ADHD book that I wrote, where you have multiple things layering on top. And as I'm like rambling on and on, I'm thinking, go check with your doctor, your lawyer, your priest. You're like, don't use me as your authority. I'm just telling you as a mother who has ridiculously researched, this is what you'll notice from an IQ test. Now, federally, I believe this is federally, pretty darn sure. If you have been listening to these podcasts over the course of a year, I keep bringing this up and you're like, you know, I wonder if there's an issue. Then guess what? You can have your school district do this testing for you at no cost to you, and they have to get it done within 30 days. But it's how you say it. And this is what I wish I would have known earlier on. So I'm an adoptive parent. I paid out of pocket for like everything. And so I would do a lot of this testing out of pocket. You don't need to. If it's impacting their education, then you can go to usually the assistant principal or start with their teacher or whoever the resource person is in the school. And you need to type this letter up. You could do it on email, print it out, sign it, and then, you know, take it in. And it just says whatever you want to say. And then this sentence has to be in there. I am formally requesting a multifactored evaluation or an IEP assessment or something of that point. Look up the exact wording. And once you give that paper in writing to the front office, to the principal, that is your documentation that they have 30 days to actually do all of the testing. They will test their eyes, their hearing, they will do an IQ test for sure, and they will bring a committee together to decide what tests they will run. They may do some other standardized testing. They will do some assessments like where you read at a certain grade level to see what level you're reading at, and then they will bring all of these reports back to a meeting that you are at, and they will say, here are the results of all of these tests, and based on the results of all of these tests and anecdotally what you've told us, we are going to determine, yes, this child qualifies for an IEP, or no, this child does not qualify for an IEP. Or they might sometimes offer you a 504, which I'll explain the difference to that in a minute. But that is how you get them to do the testing for you, and then to get all of the people at the table to decide, is this child's performance that is below their peers due to something that we could be working on at school to raise that? Is that what you found, Monique?
Yes, I did do the very same thing. Wrote a letter, had it signed, dropped it off, sealed envelope, and then counted the days.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, nobody wants to do anything at any quick speed. So we're always, you know, like, waiting to the end to get an answer.
Yes. I don't want to be like, a little nervous about putting this podcast out there, but whatever. Money is tight everywhere. Resources are low everywhere. And often I have seen children's needs go unmet because the parent didn't know exactly what they needed to say when they needed to say it, right, in order to move this process along. You may have this whole thing done and they may say, you know what? They don't qualify. Well, that's fine. You can always you can get outside testing done and apply, and then right. you can put on your warrior mama pants. Or let's be honest, they're not going to do everything. So if your child has a bunch of delays and the school is going to work on three of them, then I always put my kids in therapy and summer programs and summer camps and got tutors. You need to work on some of this at home, and the school will work on some of it at school. You just need as much partnership as you can. And that testing tells you so much. Like, once I learned how to read those IQ tests, I was able to go back to IQ tests we did when the kids were five and see their working memory and their processing and the changing of IQ tests over time, not the core number, but all the numbers underneath, which are the processes that you can work on. Now, I'm not going to say often, but you know me. I'm just going to tell you everything. So there is usually a key diagnosis that is being diagnosed for a period of time, and then they move to the next one. So for a while, it was ADHD. I would say this is probably 15, maybe 20 years ago, kids would get IEPs for ADHD. I don't see IEPs for ADHD anymore. You usually get a 504 for that now. Then it was autism. Like, the number of IEPs, if you even, and anywhere on the autism spectrum, that got an IEP. That was pretty much, if you had an autism diagnosis, you got an IEP, even if it was, one of the subcategories of autism. That's not true anymore. Lately, it's been bipolar. If you're bipolar, you can get an IEP. And Monique shaking her head. It's true, right? Like, we're going through waves. I don't know what the next thing
is. Like, whatever the current popular thing is.
Right.
And then I want to stop and say, it doesn't take away the fact that other things exist for people. Mm-hmm. It's what people are talking about. So if you feel like something else is going on with your kids, deal with that. Whatever you think it is, there's a heightened awareness of one area, that's fine.
It's just, if you have some of these diagnoses as these are being the popular thing, right. It's easier to get the IEP. And if you don't get the IEP, they're going to offer you a 504. Is it called a 504 in Indiana?
Yes. It's a federal.
Okay. So it's a so an IEP is a legally binding document. When you get an IEP, it is a legally binding document. So I'm homeschooling Abby. I did not give up my IEP. And they wanted me to. And I didn't. So they still, I just emailed them. I was like, the ACT is coming up. They're like, do you want that with accommodations? I said, yes, please. Because she has a legally binding document with our school district saying that she has special needs. Monique is raising her hand.
And I want to throw this in here because you can see me. They can't see me.
Yes.
The IEP and the 504 are legally binding now.
Those is the 504? I don't think so.
Well, IEP is for sure.
The IEP, that's the difference.
It will follow your child to college. I had no idea.
If you keep renewing it every 3 years, you have to qualify every if you no longer qualify for your IEP, then it's no longer legally binding and it won't follow your child to college.
But as a senior in high school, if you're still using it,
right,
and you wanted to take your child to college, you can submit all that documentation, and they have departments on campus which will give you the extended time, yep, the tutors, the note-taking, all the things that has helped your child in high school, which I had no idea that was even a thing until...
Yes.
The very end of high school, and I was so excited because that told me there was another option.
And also that IEP allows your child to receive public education through the age of 21.
Yes.
So beyond the senior year of high school, here in Cincinnati, that's called Project Search and Project Life. I believe that's nationwide now, but it was started at Children's Hospital. And so those are two programs that you're eligible for only if you have an IEP. To have that extra free and appropriate public education. So a 504 is typically accommodations. Mm-hmm. And those accommodations, they're written very similarly to an IEP, but they don't have the legal binding behind it. So if they aren't met or a teacher doesn't implement them and they aren't necessarily going to follow to the next year, these are just generalities. I find for the most part, if you work with your school and they are working with you, then don't become adversarial. But if your child's needs are not being met and they keep playing you lip service and they're giving you a 504, then formally request that you get a full evaluation and an IEP, assessment done within 30 days and a determination and submit your outstanding Unfortunately, it seems to be pretty easy to get accommodations when your child is young, like 3 to 5. And then again, if they're still struggling after middle school, like oh my gosh, in high school, they have been so easy to work with. Grade school was super hard. It was super hard for us to get what we needed, which is why we left and we went to Springer School and Center. It was because we couldn't get our kids' needs met to our satisfaction in the public schools. And our kids had a lot of needs, like, you know, so we went the private route. It's okay. You can make that determination. But they had an IEP while they were in private school, and then they came back to the public school with an IEP. So that's a 504. That is an IEP. That is how you get one. There's something else I was going to say about that. And their diagnosis can change. Like my son's has stayed consistent all the way through. Every 3 years when you get reevaluated for your IEP, they have changed the classification of Abby's every single time. So there are like 7 different classifications and it keeps changing. Now, if you're in the school district or you're a teacher or you're an administrator and you are going crazy because something that I said is incorrect, first of all, I'm very, very sorry. I'm doing this from a parenting perspective, although I do have a teaching degree and I have taught in the public schools and private schools. This is so state specific. I have mentioned a lot of things we have in Ohio that people don't have in other states, but IEPs and 504s are nationwide, aren't they, Monique? I think they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should be able to use them.
Okay.
If you have an IEP in one state, I think it can follow you to the next one. If you have to move.
Does. Now, my friend did that. Let me just think about that. She did move from one state to the other. I think she had to get requalified in this state. The diagnosis was the same, so she was able to get the IEP because it was an autism diagnosis, but the accommodations and how they implemented that was different because education is done state by state. So what they offered her and the assistance that she got was different than what she had had in a different state.
Right.
And some states provide more than others do. We're just telling you how to get the ball rolling here.
Okay, you know, a 504 plan is a legally binding document.
There's something about an IEP that is different from a 504. Oh, this is the other thing. A lot of times, and they may not be doing this now, but this was true when my kids were little. Both of my kids' original IEPs were for speech. Receptive expressive right. language disorder. Yeah. And they were IEPs, not 504s. Because they were IEPs, they both got changed to something different as we figured out what was really going on. And I find a lot of my friends, when their kids enter first grade or kindergarten, they say, we want to dismiss this IEP. Is that okay? No, it's not. By the way, no, it's not okay. Unless your kid really just had like a minor speech thing and everything's fine, then fine. Release them from the IEP. But don't release them from the IEP if you still feel like something else is going on. You can change the determination. Don't give up the IEP if you have one.
Because it might be hard to get it back.
Yeah, it's really hard to get it back. And don't let them change it to a 504 either. That's great. So and they'll always say, well, it's the same in a 504 as it is in IEP. And then I say, great, then we'll just keep the IEP.
If it's the same, we're not changing.
Because it's not the same. That's why they want to change it. Okay, so that is a little bit more about how would you go about getting these tests done? What are the differences in the different kind of levels? When we were making this Warrior Mama Bible binder with the content creation team, and we were talking about as parents who have advocated for their children through IEPs, obviously, there's so much we could put in here. Yet at the same time, we can't put everything in there. So I kept saying to the team, just make what would work for someone in their first year. So if you've been advocating for your kids for 10 years and they have IEPs and you want to buy the binder, great. There may not be anything in here that's earth-shattering to you. But if your child has recently been diagnosed or you're just now going for the IEP or you recently got an IEP and you have all this paperwork and you don't know what to keep, this is the perfect binder for you. It is a combination of encouragement, instruction, grace, and organization. It really has all those pieces in it. So when we first got on the this interview call, Monique was like, go to page 10. So I go to page 10. And page 10 actually comes from podcast episode 73. So if what we're about to talk to you about right now resonates with you, then go ahead and find podcast episode 73 and listen to that one. And podcast episode 73, I recorded after I had done some professional organizing here in Cincinnati. Fox 19 did a live on-air two-hour kitchen organization segment with me, and we picked a family that needed to have their kitchen organized. And the family we picked had four children, all of which were on IEPs. They had triplets. I think they all had significant IEPs. And their other child was on an IEP as well. And so after organizing the kitchen, which was great, it was really fun, it was heartwarming, I was really reflecting on the family and some of my own experience and the other people that I know who have children with developmental delays, IEPs, special needs, whatever. And I came up with these five commonalities that I have noticed among these parents. And these are what you guys are already emailing me from the podcast that we did on January 2nd also, is that number one, no one chooses a child's disability. Like, I went through a grieving process of like, did I cause this? Like, could possibly something have I done cause this disability? And number two, parents of children with all types of disabilities feel like they're constantly fighting. And I know this to be true. Like, you feel like you start to go into battle mode over everything. Like, when our kids were gluten-free and casein-free, like, why don't you have a gluten-free option? Like, you start to feel like the whole world is against you because you have to fight for everything that it seems like everybody else's kids just do naturally. Did you notice that, Monique?
I did notice that. And sometimes it's kind of frustrating, and you look around and it looks like other people have it easier in some areas. And why is this such a struggle? But I also decided that, you know what? I'm going to fight for my kids because nobody else is going to fight for them the same way.
You kind of put your blinders on.
You have to.
But then you also put your blinders on to everyone else, and you kind of retreat into your own house because you just get tired of being at the party and making excuses for your kids or what they're doing differently or why you aren't able to stay out past 8, or it's just easier to just not even go.
Well, and, you know, there's that nagging voice that says, you know, life's not fair. This isn't fair. Why is it like this for us or
yes.
him
oh,
or her?
And oh, yes.
I had, you know, one of my kids at one point said, why is it hard for me and not anybody else? Why is it always the hardest for me? And that's hard because when your kids know they're different.
Once they notice. Yep.
Yep. It's hard.
Yep. It's just easier to do something as a family or just start doing more family related things. The divorce statistic for parents of children with special needs is 85%.
Wow.
85%.
Because of that specifically.
Yep. It's just the stress of, and I watched, okay, John and Kate Plus 8 every episode multiple times. Like, I don't know, I'm obsessed with Kate Gosselin, always have been. I love big families. I watch the Duggars. I watch the Multiple Blessings of 8, all of them.
Yeah.
I know all of them. And when they announced they were getting divorced, this rocked my world. It was also right when my father was dying. So I remember exactly where I was, up in my hometown, like, my father was getting ready to pass away and they were getting divorced. My whole world was ending. And I was like, oh, they're part of the statistic. I thought they were going to make it through. I get emails. They're like, yeah, my husband and I just separated, blah, blah. I mean, you should know if you have ended up getting divorced, it's only 15% that managed to make it through without the divorce. That is why I am always saying, my number one goal in life is to remain married because I know what I'm up against. I know what I'm up against.
Yep.
Just statistically, divorce is really high anyways. But, you know, the home life that you don't see behind closed doors hasn't been like rosy. So I have to prioritize that. Another point I have on this podcast is that eventually the parents are depressed, one or both. It's really hard. It's not easy. You know, juggling soccer, traveling soccer and finding the expense of soccer is one kind of stress. And you could talk about that on Facebook and you could commiserate with the other parents on the sideline. But if you're talking about the expense of doing a gluten-free, casein-free and 35 other free food and paying for private schooling and tutoring by yourself while you're driving 30 hours a week, you can't put that on Facebook and nobody's in the sidelines next to you commiserating about it. You're by yourself. So then you start to think, what if I can't earn enough money? What if I can't be there long enough? What if I die before my kids die? Seriously, how are they going to make it? This is what you think. Have you ever thought those things?
Oh, definitely. I've thought those things. And then we have six children. So you have regular life, the normal stuff that has to be done. We're not even talking the special education things.
So
we have to run our regular life, mm-hmm. and kids have their activities. And then you add in anything that goes along with one, two, three, four, however many kids have special needs on some level.
Yeah.
You know, whatever it looks like to you, that's an additional job, task, thing to do. And it can be very tiring and very exhausting. And yes, I did go through a period of time where I was depressed. I was diagnosed. I was taking, you know, antidepressants because there was just so much. And I retreated and didn't tell anybody.
Yeah, Greg's like, why did we stop sending out Christmas cards? I'm like, dude, they aren't in any sports or any extracurriculars I could put on the back of that card. We made it through another year. I mean, what did we put on the card? We're all still alive. The house didn't burn down. Like,
or just a family picture. There you go.
Just a family picture, but that wasn't good enough for me. So that is actually, we did start sending them to family this year, and it is just a picture.
Yeah, there you go.
Because there is no like little letter that's going to go along with it. I'm like, how do we sum up this year? Let's not. let's just not. And so then it's like, why don't you send Christmas cards? Oh yeah, it's too expensive, too much time. It's not true. I don't want to send Christmas cards right now. Now I do. There were 10 years where I didn't want to send them, so I didn't. But I felt guilty about it. Yeah.
Especially when you get them in the mail.
I actually still like getting them in the mail. I don't mind it now, but
no,
yeah.
It's too busy to mail.
All of our friends' kids going off to college, and they've all been accepted with full rides to all these amazingly four-year colleges, and they're graduating college, and they're going to be doctors and lawyers and nurses and teachers and all these things. And I'm like, great. That's not what we're doing.
Nope.
Yeah, you have to reframe your future. Yep.
And you have to realize that, and this is what I learned, everybody has something.
Right.
All of our somethings look different.
Mm-hmm.
So the this picture, the perfect picture, I know it's not, but thanks for sharing. Because working, and I'm going to flip a little bit, but working with organizing clients that I do, and you talk to all kinds of people, and I told my husband once, you drive into this fancy schmancy neighborhood, and the request was, would I please help her get all her paperwork organized for her upcoming court appointment for her divorce?
Mm-hmm.
And I told my husband, you know what? Everybody has something, and it might look one way on the outside. So, you know, and some diagnoses of back to the IEP are the invisible ones. They don't, your kids look normal. They look fine. They're acting fine. So why are there problems? You know, so it's hard to explain things. And I don't need to explain things to everybody.
Yeah, I went through a while where I explained everything to anybody who would stop long enough to listen. Hence why the Warrior Mama blog is gone. Imagine if that had been a podcast. Woo!
Oh my gosh. But everybody has something. Yep. So, you know, and I think as a parent becoming older, you know, I'm almost out of my 40s, but I think when I, you know, turned 40, I'm going to be 50 this year and I'm all about it and I'm so excited and I'm going to have a big old party because I think it's a milestone and I'm going to go with it. But when I... you know, probably 42, 43, I finally stopped and looked around and went, you know what? This is my life.
Yep.
These are my kids. I'm owning it. I'm not here trying to prove anything to anybody else. I really don't care.
Because
all my energy was going into let's survive, you know, let's get all these kids grown up with whatever their things are. So yeah, parenting is hard. There's no manual.
Mm-hmm.
But
and this book kind of helps you create your own manual. So let me tell you a little bit about what's in it. This is a little different than any other binder we have. So it has the workbook in there, which walks you through some of the things that we've talked about on this podcast and helps you gather some of the information that you might need in order to better advocate for your child. But we've also added in all of the 2.0/pockets. So you have 5 pink, 5 purple, 5 blue, and 5 green. The green are not designed to stay in your binder. They come out. The pink ones are for anything medical related. So all your medical stuff is going to be in pink. Anything educational related is going to be purple. Anything blue is going to be administrative for you or the team that you're assembling to take care of your kids and help them through the process. So your binder is going to be fat with these 15 slash pockets in it plus this workbook. So you could get all of your documentation in this binder and take it wherever you need to go. And then the green ones are going, they have specific labels on them and they are going in your Sunday basket, but it's a whole row of green in your Sunday basket related to your child's medical and educational needs. So if you don't need them, you don't need them. I've been very open that for about 5 years, 50% of our take-home pay went to medical expenses, and I would have needed all of these. I don't right now, but I would have, which are incoming medical bills, exclamation of benefits, reconciled bills that you need to pay, bills that you have in appeal or arbitration, and then any tax information. So what podcast is it that I talked about this? You can write off any medical needs on your tax return. And if your child's IEP is medically related, which ADHD is a medical diagnosis, then anything educationally related that applies to that IEP is a tax deductible item, including driving. So driving to all the doctor's appointments, driving to school, driving to meetings, you would not believe how much we were able to write off on our taxes just for mileage, which I think is like, do you know what it is? 55 cents or 60 cents a mile? So even back to school and forth, if it's only 2 miles away, it's $2. It's $4 a day. It's a coffee. Not that you're drinking coffee. I know you're brewing yours at home. But anyway, if you were, you could get back that tax money and get a Starbucks, you know, once a month. So you've looked through the binder. What do you think, Monique? Like it's pretty comprehensive. Great place to get you started.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now and the way it's laid out with the different categories of sections, medical section, education section, mm-hmm. your team of people, and the financial is amazing because within that section, you know, you can have 5 different folders.
Yeah, so, and we give you examples to start but you're going to modify this.
You can add or subtract what you need. And all of the some tracking that's in here, you know, mm-hmm. communication records. Every time you talk to somebody, if you don't know this, take this away. You date it and you document what was talked about and who you talked to. That mm-hmm. is hugely
print
important.
Print out emails, print them.
And then put them in your binder. But going mm-hmm. back to and having those printed out emails in your binder when you go into those meetings to refresh people's memory is great. And then just in these meetings, there is information in this binder about, you know, phrases to use, things to say, what do you need to bring, you know, how to handle yourself, and that you're not alone as a parent. There are other people out there who have done this already and who are walking through helping their kids.
Yeah, here's the thing. If you put the binder together, like get all your papers together, this is the best project to do at a paper organizing retreat.
Yes.
Fly to Cincinnati if you need to. I will show you my kids' IEP binders. This is a great thing to do for a weekend. Bring it all, get it organized, leave. You're spending so much time right now, if you're new in this, figuring out where that paper is, what that paper even is. And half the time I would second guess. I'd be like, you know what? Maybe it's not as bad as I think it is. Maybe I'm making it all up. And then we'd have an incident. I'd be like, oh yeah, right. No, wrong. We need help immediately. But I forget, like, because you want to forget. Once your binder is done, then you could take that same time and energy in reaching out to other groups of children who have the same issue that your child has, or making more meetings at the school, or finding an alternative doctor, or, you know, you'll spend your time that way versus trying to figure out what all this paper is and keeping all this paperwork together. Like, we want to eliminate that time so that you can use your time advocating.
We had a gal come to the last paper organizing retreat.
Yep.
And we didn't have the IEP binder yep. finished. And she created a medical binder for her kids. Mm-hmm. And they were special needs and needed all of this. But she was so excited when she went to leave to go home because this can be such a huge project. And
Right.
With the uninterrupted time and space and mm-hmm. help to pull all the documents and stuff together to create this binder for herself, she was so grateful to have the space mm-hmm. to do it.
And it is a big to the moms. Like, I think she talked to you about it, didn't she?
Did.
I wasn't there at
yep.
that time.
Yep.
But if I was there, I mean, show me your kid's test result. I'll pull out those numbers. I'll be like, okay, I can tell you the red flags. I'm standing right there.
Yeah, you had yours and she had hers, but that was her huge project. She did yeah. organizing, but she did this. And we can get so buried in life.
Yeah.
That to take the time to find all of this stuff and assemble it, it does take time. But once
and
this is done, it's
hard.
The one thing, it's the one thing that you need to do before you go forward.
When you do it on your own, without other people around you, I mean, you can do it because, I mean, I did it.
Sure.
You know, you have to keep substantiating documentation. So, like, you have to keep, like, the math test that the teacher put, like, a check mark on, but really everything was wrong on it. Like, hello, did you even look at this paper? So, you have to keep all that stuff. So, every time you're updating your binder by yourself, you are reliving all your child's lowest moments mm-hmm. because you're keeping them in order to advocate for your child. And so if you're even remotely on the depression end, you're like, oh my gosh, like, are we ever going to make progress? And I'm just to tell you, yes, you are. Like, I'm at the other end. You're going to make amazing progress. But it is really easy as you're going through that paperwork, trying to organize it, to stop looking at it categorically and looking at it judgmentally, both on, like, for so many reasons, like, and to turn it into a, it goes negative fast. So I'm going to say it can go negative really fast.
It does. Now, another part of it that I actually thought was going to be very helpful, Lisa, is a page that says what did not work. So a place to document medications, therapies, treatments, and accommodations that have been done or tried.
Yes, I have that for my kids. Yeah,
that medication. Didn't work. So I think this, you know, did not work list in here is a huge help because yeah. you can go back and say, wait a minute, we did do that. Because sometimes so many things happen that it's hard to remember who did what when.
Especially,
and did that work or did that not work? I can't remember.
Especially with ADHD and mood issues. Mm-hmm. Those two especially, because they are not a blood test. Like, right. you have type 1 diabetes, it's a blood test. You need insulin. It's a matter of how much insulin.
Yep.
If your child is bipolar, because it's one of the ones that's really being diagnosed a lot right now, there's no blood test for bipolar. Zero. And the only way to start counteracting bipolar is to start making not just one medication, but a combination of medications in multiple strength, you know, in varying right. strengths, and that changes throughout the course of the year, every year, and developmentally. Like, it's very complicated to treat bipolar. Additionally, ADHD usually is comorbid with anxiety, and sometimes mood issues as well. Mm-hmm. And different ADHD medications can cause anxiety and can cause mood issues. And so if you have a mood issue, you would never use a stimulant. If you, you know, so they, both of my kids have ADHD diagnoses. So as we went through the medications, I wrote down every single one at what dosage so that when this current one either stopped being effective or whatever, and we started looking back at the whole list, because there is a whole list that will work, the doctor doesn't always remember. They have it in the chart, but you might switch doctors, et cetera. And then I could say which ones, I want that information in my hands of right. what has worked in the past and what has not worked in the past. Yeah. Well, I think we've given you guys a lot to think about. If you don't have any children who have ADHD or delays or learning disabilities and you actually listen to this whole podcast, pray for those who do mm-hmm. and offer your help and services and no judgment. And that's exactly what they need. Like, just grace. All they need is grace. They will be great advocates for their own kids. But just give them grace. That's what they need. That's what I wanted. Well, Monique, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Again, if Cincinnati is too far for you, we have a whole bunch of people who have paper organizing workshops, and we have some that are all paper organized that can organize your paper in your house and do paper organizing retreats. You can find all of that in our directory. If you just go to organize365.com and scroll down to the bottom, you can find our directory of certified professional organizers. Monique, thanks for joining us.
You are very welcome, Lisa.
And Monique will be able to answer you as you guys are getting the IEP binder and you're not going to make it to an in-person paper organizing or retreat. You're in the Sunday Basket Club. Monique can answer those questions for you live on Sundays.